Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Inside Scoop Live. Hello, I'm Susan Violante. I'm your host for today. I'm really excited to be speaking on the phone with G.E. Gardiner, co-author of Glimpse of Sunlight, the first of the Jonathan Dickinson Odyssey. But before we start, let's learn a little bit more about Gardiner. G.E. Gardiner spent his first career founding and managing small businesses. Unfortunately, that career ended on December 28, 1996. While skiing atop a mountain in western Maryland, he suffered a hemorrhagic brainstem stroke, which hospitalized him for 6.5 weeks. In 2004, he began mental therapy by writing a journal. Brain damage left him without the ability to handwrite, and his hand-eye coordination also perished. The only way to accommodate his wish to write was to use speech recognition software. In 2012, the Florida Writers Association published his short story, Speed, in the anthology, My Wheels. That same year, best-selling Amazon author Leona DeRosa Bodie and nationally acclaimed artist Steve Witocki joined him for a new project, the Jonathan Dickinson Odyssey series. In the fall of 2014, G.E. Gardiner's young adult science fiction ebook, Legends of the Parabel Nanotech, will debut. He is currently writing the second book in the Jonathan Dickinson Odyssey, Deliverance, and helping authors and stroke survivors. For more information on Gardiner and his books, visit his websites at www.gegardiner.com, and that is G-E-G-A-R-D-I-N-E-R.com, and also his website www.jonathandickinson.org, and that is www.jonathandickinson.org. Hi, Glenn. How you doing today?
Good. How are you, Susan?
Pretty good. Thank you so much for being with us. I must say that I am a big fan of your book.
Thank you very much.
I loved it, and I think it's such a adventure when you write about the Caribbean that it's my, you know, pirates and all that stuff. It's one of my favorite topics, so can't wait to begin this interview. But before we start, can you tell us a little bit about yourself for our listeners?
Yes, I am in my second career. My first was as an entrepreneur. I created and managed small businesses up in Maryland. And then in 1996, I suffered a hemorrhagic brainstem stroke while I was skiing on top of a mountain. And I ended up selling the business a few years later and basically did nothing for a while because I couldn't. And then I started writing a journal that led me to start writing some fiction. And then I began writing basically as a therapy for my brain. It seemed to help me. That developed into writing a little bit longer articles, and I began writing a young adult science fiction novel, which I now have 32 versions. We are currently working on the last version, which will be published this year. I have also gotten involved with the Florida Writers Association, and I'm a leader in the story structure group, which helps authors strengthen their story structure skills and produce commercially viable novels. And I'm involved in some volunteer and philanthropic opportunities living in South Florida with my wife. And I write pretty much all day long, every day.
You know, Glenn, I don't think I've ever told you this, but you're such an inspiration to me because I decided to do what I do full-time, you know, and leave my accounting career also because of a medical condition. And it's really what forced me to revisit my life and kind of and see how happy I had been doing whatever I did before and all that stuff. How did your change of lifestyle and career affect you spiritually, personally?
It changed everything. It was a very severe stroke. It's only a few percentage of the people that have brain hemorrhagic brainstem stroke survive. I had a long period of time where I was pretty much worthless. It took about really 10 years. I forced myself to go back to work after 4 years with other people because I couldn't stand to sit around and do nothing. My background is that not only was I involved in businesses, but I was also involved in the community and politics. I was a commissioner for the local airport. I was president of Rotary.
Wow.
All these type of leadership things in the community. So when I became a person who could barely get a job mowing grass on for property owners that I partied with on weekends, it was very embarrassing. So I forced myself to go back to work, and that was a mistake because I really got fired from 6 jobs because not because they didn't like me, but because I couldn't perform the work.
Yeah, yeah. I can imagine that, and that was something that I consider when I have rheumatoid arthritis and I had to walk from one place to another a lot, and now I'm somebody that, you know, has trouble if I'm on my feet more than 10 minutes. So, but I think that your case was so challenging because the one thing that you could do, you know, to as a therapy for your brain problems due to the stroke, it was actually a challenge because you weren't able to use your hands to type. Am I correct?
That's right. I have to use Dragon. Actually speaking, I cannot write with my hand or type.
Wow. Can you tell us a little bit more of how that works for our listeners that have maybe some issues with typing and they think they cannot, you know, really work on the computer?
Yes, I've been working with Dragon, actually speaking, since the beginning of, since 2004 when I started writing, and I've gone through various versions. It didn't really get real good until about 2 years ago when they came out with version 12. The problem was the consistency because in computer language, when you speak, it's converting the voice frequencies into numbers, and it's very complicated. It involves a lot of number crunching, a lot of computer assets, and uses up a lot of what your computer has. So if you have a off-the-shelf computer with a cheap microphone and you don't have a good version of Dragon, it's usually not that good. And in the beginning, you had to teach Dragon how to how to transcribe from your voice. Now you can buy version 12.5, start without doing any teaching, and it is pretty accurate. It learns from every time you record your voice into it and push OK, it learns from that. So the more you use it, the better it gets. Now I have had to buy a computer that is made for Dragon because I'm using it sometimes 14 hours a day.
Wow.
And I have a very good microphone. Those are two things. A lot of people think they can just get a $50 microphone and get a cheap version of Dragon and buy an off-the-shelf computer, and sometimes you can get away with that. Unfortunately, sometimes some of the components don't work too well together. So I've learned a lot from that, and basically I can help anybody that needs to learn how to do it. All they have to do is contact me through my website or through my email.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's great. And for our listeners, your book, Glimpse of Sunlight, has its own website, and is the www.jonathandickinson.org. They can contact you through there. Am I correct?
Yes, either there or through my website, which is www.gegardner.com.
Okay,
and
perfect.
G. E. Gardner is GEGARDINER.
Perfect. And you mentioned before a virtual structure group. How does that work? Tell us a little bit more about that. What is it, and how helpful was it for you?
Very, very, very much so. As a matter of fact, I continue to do it because it reinforces the it reinforces my brain to exactly what I really have to strive for. Back when I decided to write the story of Jonathan Dickinson, I wanted to make sure that the story was good because I knew there was probably going to be an international market for it. Mm-hmm. So I found the best storytellers in Hollywood and started reading what they have. There's a lot of people that help you with story structure around the world and on the internet, but unfortunately many of them haven't really done it. So I went and I studied Christopher Vogler, who studied Joseph Campbell, and basically that story structure is called the hero's journey, and it is based on the fact that since the beginning of man communicating and telling stories, all the stories seem to have one structure. And in 75% of all the mainstream movies and most of the mainstream novels, basically they have the same structure. They're just told a million different ways. Basically, after learning that structure, I developed a group within the Florida Writers Association, and we have, this is the third year, we've averaged about 10 people in the group, and many of them are already award-winning authors. The first year was kind of interesting because several of the authors rewrote their books because they learned a new structure and realized how important it was. And the whole structure is based on eliciting emotions from the reader. When you finish the book, you should feel satisfied. And in order to feel satisfied with the structure as an author, you have to make your book move the reader's emotions in specific ways. Failure to do so will result in a reader not being satisfied. So we have that group, and it is very popular. Several of the members have been in it 3 years with me, and we've been written up in the Florida Writers Magazine. Basically, we're just passing along information. It's a mentor group. It's not a critique group. In other words, the members don't read their what they've written and then have it critiqued. Basically, I give them exercises each month, and they complete the exercises. And the exercises are based on the plotting structure along with the dramatic action, which is what occurs in a book. We look at the thematic significance, which is basically why the writer wrote the book. What lesson is he conveying? And then we also concentrate on character development. They were the character arc.
This is why I always stress the importance of all these new writers that are coming up with such interesting stories to share through all the facilities of self-publishing today. To work on the craft, to find, join associations and do exercises and take advantage of all the resources that these associations give them. Because, you know, some of the stories that I have the pleasure to review, lack a little bit of techniques that would actually make an excellent fiction story. And your book is just totally caught me, my interest from the beginning, and I was not able to put it down. And that's very difficult for me to do, because I have a problem with attention span. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, you know, it really needs to hook me in the beginning. And that's what, knowing a little bit more about structure and how to move, like you said, the emotions of the reader is exactly what a wonderful story needs when they're presenting it. Inside Scoop Live is a global internet-based broadcast specialized in interviewing published authors about their current books and their areas of expertise. Join us and hear both well-known and upcoming writers talking candidly about their life, experience, as well as the business of being an author in today's literary world. Always interesting and current, we strive to bring our audience high-quality discussions that spotlight a vast diversity of authors in the field today. Our interviews are available 24/7 through direct podcast, as well as MP3 download from your computer for your convenience. Please visit us at InsideScoopLive.com. Welcome back to Inside Scoop Live. Today I'm talking with G.E. Gardiner, co-author of Glimpse of Sunlight, the first of the Jonathan Dickinson Odyssey. Stay tuned because we're going to continue this fun and inspiring conversation with Gardiner about overcoming his medical history, working with stroke survivors, his writing, and so much more. But in the meantime, you can check out his book, Glimpse of Sunlight, by visiting his websites at www.jonathandickinson.org and www.gegardiner.com. But all these that you're talking about is telling me, I mean, we know why you started writing, and we know how you went about to learn more about writing, but I am curious to know, why do you write what you write?
I write what I write because I want to entertain. I want people to learn from what I'm writing. Even in my science fiction, which is a young adult book, it's made to have lessons that the reader will learn from the action and the development of the characters. My whole purpose is, when I started writing and I decided to go commercial, was not to make money. It was, I wanted to create a business because it could no longer create a brick and mortar business. And in order to create a business in books, I had to create books that were commercially viable. In the Legends of the Parable, which is the science fiction book I'm writing, I have a firm in Italy that wants to make it into a multimedia book, where the beginning of each chapter would start off with a short video that would be the hook of the chapter. In other words, when the child wanted to close the book and go to bed, when his parents told him to go to bed, he would probably look at the next video, and from that video would have to read the next chapter. So, and they want to add some other things to it, too. But the whole point of what I'm doing is to create entertainment, to get people to be excited, and to teach.
That is awesome about your opportunity with this application type of thing that's happening for your sci-fi. I don't know if you know this, but I am a sci-fi fan. I grew up reading a bunch of sci-fi books because my brother's books would get passed down to me.
Mm-hmm.
So that's actually one of my favorite genres. Tell me something. You know, when we read every single book, I'm sure, I don't know about all the readers, but I love to read the acknowledgement page. If you read that, it also tells you just how much support and help we authors need in order to finish a book first, and second, to publish it. Tell us a little bit about your team for those who are beginning to think about publishing their things. What type of team do they need?
Well, if they're going to self-publish, they need to, and this is what I started with. I require more of a team because I am handicapped, but everyone needs, if they're going to self-publish, everyone needs to have a team that consists of most of the assets that a big publisher could perform, but they're not going to have the lobbying that the big publisher has. So it's important that they accomplish all the tasks that a big publisher would do. And some people talk about the length it takes from a publisher to publish the book, to get it out to the people. But if you do it yourself and you do all the things that you need to do, it's going to take you time, too. So the person that finishes a novel at 6 o'clock and has it uploaded to Amazon at 8 is not going to have a novel, most likely. Is not most likely going to have a novel that is going to appear professional. It needs to be professionally edited, and sometimes more than one editor. We had two editors, one glimpse of sunlight. I talked to Hugh Howey a few months ago. He had five editors on his books.
Wow.
And I talked to C.J. Lyons, who has three editors that edit her books for. It's very important. On my team, I also have partner authors like Leona Buddy, who's a partner. I have a writer in Michigan, an aspiring writer who I'm working with on the science fiction, who's helping me with a little of the rough drafting. Mm-hmm. I have an intern that handles other duties. It's part-time, and I also have a part-time research assistant. We utilize everyone that can help publicize the book, can help us produce the book. I have a story consultant now on a part-time story consultant that helps me with my projects, and just every asset I can bring on. Some don't have to be paid. Some will do it because you trade. But you need to make a deal to have all these people on board. All of my team work, they're all people who have their own little businesses or niches, and they contribute for a reason. Artist who is a nationally acclaimed nautical artist is named Stephen Watuki, and he did the cover art for the Jonathan Dickinson Odyssey and is illustrating all the books. He doesn't work for me. He has a piece of the pie, but that's all part of it. If you want to produce a good product, you have to have all the assets. It's just like making a movie. You have to have all the assets in place. So, you know, if you just want to write a book based on your thoughts and get it done at 6 o'clock and upload it to Amazon at 7 and then sit back and wonder why it's not selling, I get a lot of people that come to our Florida Writers Association meetings and they brag about it. They did just that, and then about a month later, they'll say, why isn't my book selling? And that's the reason. They haven't created a commercially viable product.
And I couldn't agree more. When I published my book in 2009, I was not even looking to publish. It was something that just really just came out of nowhere. And it was such an experience for me because I didn't realize what it took. Really, and if it wasn't because I did have a good publicist at that time that guided me all throughout the entire process because they just liked my story, I would have not imagined just the amount of money that I needed to invest, and I would have not imagined every single factor that was needed to be considered to make a sellable product. And now, after years, you know, I'm like being creative on how I get my help, mm-hmm. like you said. So, listeners, you know, if you're a writer and or an author and you're trying to get everything together, there are many creative ways to make it happen. So, I ended up finding a sponsor for it at one point, and that helped me and took a bunch of classes to figure it out, and look at me now. Now I've made the entire process that I went through my day job. So there is always a way, and this is why you inspire me a lot when I first read your bio, because you've gone through challenges that we all go through, plus you got the whipped cream on top that you had to go through, you know? So, and your book, Glimpse of Sunlight, is a bestseller in Amazon. So, kudos to you, Glenn. I love it. And for our listeners, this is www.jonathandickinson.org, and that is JonathanDickinson.org. We, you know, you have gone through all this, you changed your life, and that's already awesome. But what I think that is even more awesome is that you are working with stroke survivors. How is this, I can understand how you can help them. And I want to know what exactly you're doing to help them, but I also want to know how helping them gives you back. How does it affect you?
it makes me feel good. I went through hell for 10 years, and everybody, when a person has a stroke and they have cognition problems and memory problems, they're subject to people taking advantage of them. I haven't done as much help as I did before I came to Florida. Florida's been hard. It's been hard to identify people that really need help. I need to get associated with some neurologists, because I want to help the people that have just had the stroke within the last year. In North Carolina, I remember one time I went to a stroke support meeting, and I didn't go because I needed support. I went because I think at that point in time it was 12 years since my stroke, and most of them had had a stroke within the last year or two. They actually not only listened to every word I said, they followed me out to my car in the parking lot and talked for about 45 minutes, just asked me questions. They might have questions like, should I tell an employer when I'm applying for a new job that have had a stroke? That's a good question. Some employers it would not work with, and some employers it would work with. Some employers would actually help you, and the people know how they need to know where to go and how to get that kind of help. There's a ton of questions. I can remember receiving bills from collection agencies 3 years after my stroke, which we normally just paid. But the fact is, we found out later that many of them were from doctors who I never saw. People were taking advantage of me. And like if you have to, most people that have had brainstem strokes go through depression. I've been on depression medicine for 18 years now. And when I first started going, I had to go get it from a psychiatrist. Now I just get it from my regular doctor. But then I had to go through a psychiatrist. When you miss a psychiatrist appointment, they nail you with between $50 and $100 for missing the appointment. The problem is, when you've just had a stroke, it's hard to remember those appointments. So you're kind of caught between a rock and a hard place. And if you don't have someone to help you to make sure you go to the appointments on time and you do all the things that you're supposed to do, you're going to be taken advantage of. Even today, 19 years after my stroke, my wife still has to sit at all my medicine, because if she doesn't, and it's happened two or three times when I feel confident and I say I'm going to do it, within 2 months, I'm not taking the right medicine anymore.
And then you realize when something is going wrong, probably, right?
Right. So I really want to make a concerted effort here in Southern Florida to help as many people as I can. I went to one support meeting where there was probably 200 people there, and to come to find out they were all snowbirds who just came for the dinner. I didn't see one person there who looked like they had a stroke. But they all, some people said they had a stroke 2 years ago, and I'll say, well, how long were you in the hospital? And they say, well, I didn't go to the hospital.
Wow. You know, it's amazing. My mother, about a year ago, had a minor stroke. And if you look at her, you would not know it. But she tells me, I am not the same one from the day before I had that mini stroke. And I can see it. I know that, I forget more things. I see the difference. But, if you look at her, you think that she never had anything.
Right, my kids say the same thing about me, and they're right. I'm not the same person. I changed overnight. And after that, I wasn't able to be a father to my kids the way I was before the stroke. Before the stroke, I had a very strong ego. I call it a confidence level. I flew my own airplane. I did lots of stuff. And now, to me, the more important thing is not materialistic, but quality of life. Mine and other people. I'm a totally different person. I would have never led a volunteer group like I do with FWA, the Florida Writers Association, just to help other people for free. I would never have done that. Now, I did do things like working with Christmas in April and Rotary and things like that, but I did it because I was a businessman. Now I have nothing to gain. I really don't care about money the way I used to. I'm not looking for a job. It's an entirely different life.
It is. And I want to encourage our listeners to check out also your personal website. Correct me if I'm wrong, gegardiner.com, and that is gegardiner.com, as well as your book website, Glimpse of Sunlight, which is www.jonathandickinson.org. There's also a book trailer there, and I'm sure that, you know, in your personal website there will be a lot of information for those of you that are somehow, have been affected with a stroke in any shape or form or type of stroke. Unfortunately, we're coming to, we're the end of our time, but before we go, I'd like to ask my authors, Glenn, you know, you've been, especially with you, because you've been through so much to get to where you are today, what would you tell somebody that wants to write and publish a book and doesn't think that either because, they have a physical, mental, or like me, a language handicap, they think they can't do it? What would you tell that person?
Well, first of all, I think there's a book in everybody. It's the ability to get it out of your mind and onto paper in a way that would convey a message to the readers. I think everybody should write a book. Now, if you want to sell it, you need to realize that you're going into business, and you have to learn not only the craft of writing, but how to be a business person. Those are two very, very strong things. When I was in business, I would tell everybody, people would see me flying my plane and riding my boat and everything, and they would say, I want to do just that. And I'd say, I don't go home at 5 o'clock. You've got to remember, I pay for these things in ways you don't say. So, and I would encourage everybody to write a book. However, if they do and they want to sell the book, they have to realize that there's more to it. But, yes, it's writing a book or journal is a great therapeutic activity for everybody, and getting that information out on paper, especially so others can comprehend it and feel good about it, is a phenomenal thing, and I encourage everybody to do it.
And but the moment you publish to make a profit out of it, it stopped being your hobby, it stopped
right.
being your personal journal, or it stopped being your little memoir for your family. It became a business.
Right.
I agree with you 100%. Glenn, it's been a pleasure talking to you. I really hope you look me up and let me know when your next book comes out. I for sure want to read it. And listeners, check out his website again and his book, which he co-authored with Leona, www.jonathandickinson.org. And keep in touch with him if you are interested in learning more about what he's doing for survivors of stroke through his personal website at www.gegardiner.com. Glenn, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
And to you listeners, thank you so much for joining us again, and until next time.